Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Eclipses, What Everyone Needs to Know, by Frank Close. Narrated by Corrie James. Publisher's Note. In this audio edition, you will hear references to illustrations, figures, graphs, and tables present in the print and e-book formats of the book. Foreword. On August 21, 2017, millions of people across the United States witnessed the great American eclipse of the sun. I was one of them. The moment it was over, I was inundated with questions. What caused the weird shadows and colors in the build-up to totality? Were those ephemeral bands of shadows gliding across the ground in the seconds before totality real, or an optical illusion? Why this? What's that? But above all, where and when can I see a total solar eclipse again? If you want to experience this exquisite phenomenon in the United States, then keep your diary free on Monday, April 8, 2024. However, if like me, you can't wait that long, there are, on average, a couple of total solar eclipses every 3 years, but you might have to travel. In 2019 and 2020 to South America or the Pacific, in 2021 to Antarctica. You get a year off in 2022, but in 2023 you could go to Western Australia. And then, having become an umbrophile, a lover of the moon shadow, you can plan exciting trips into the future to witness this most beautiful of natural phenomena. Whether you want to understand more about what you saw or missed in 2017, prepare for the next one, or just learn more about eclipses in myth, history, literature, art, and science, here, in this book, are my 101 things you need to know. Frank Close, Oxford, England, 2019. At Close Frank. 1. Eclipse Facts and Fictions. 1.1. What is a solar eclipse? The moon's diameter is 400 times smaller than the sun's, but the moon is also 400 times closer to us, so remarkably, the two bodies appear exactly the same size when viewed from the Earth. For about 14 days a month, the orbiting moon is on the day side of the spinning Earth, and the sun's light casts a shadow which most of the time is projected far off into space. But on very particular occasions, it falls onto Earth. Then the moon obscures our view of the sun. 1.2. What is a lunar eclipse? For a solar eclipse to happen, it must be daytime. A lunar eclipse, by contrast, occurs at night, during the 14 days of the lunar month, when the moon is on the dark side of Earth and visible at night. Moonshine is reflected sunlight. On the night of the full moon, the moon rises at sunset and sets at the end of the night as the sun rises again. On one occasion during this period, when the moon is directly opposite the sun, it reflects sunlight directly. This is the literal full moon. When this happens, Earth's shadow is projected into space and may fall upon the moon, covering it either partially or totally. Then, instead of a bright full moon, the moon is eclipsed. It isn't invisible at totality, however, because Earth's atmosphere bends some of the sunlight back toward the distant moon and gives it a glowing orange outer region. This blood-red moon has inspired poets and mystics throughout the ages. A lunar eclipse on April 3, 33, the evening after the crucifixion of Jesus of Nazareth, was regarded as hugely significant by his followers. Both lunar and solar eclipses have inspired awe throughout history and continue to do so even today. 1.3. Why are eclipses so fascinating? The sun and moon are the most familiar lights in the heavens. This is true for all societies and for all of recorded history. The sun's energy is the source of life, and the bright full moon enabled primitive societies to see at night and hunt for food. The moon determines the tides, and this visible manifestation of its effects led astrologers to believe that the moon determines our moods. Indeed, the British Lunacy Act of 1842 defined a lunatic to be someone who was lucid during the 2 weeks prior to a full moon and acted strange during the following fortnight. Belief that the moon's phases affect human affairs was widespread in the past and survives today. The sun and moon were central to the rhythm of ancient societies, as the regular motions of this pair through the sky and the positions on the horizon where they rise and set determined the seasons. In short, the motion of sun and moon relative to us on Earth provided the first reliable means of quantifying the calendar and gave order to human affairs. The disappearance of either of these leading players in an eclipse threatened the natural harmony. For the ancient Greeks, an eclipse was explained as a sign that the gods were angry and was therefore regarded as a bad omen. So important and regular were the sun and moon that many societies elevated them to the status of gods. When a god vanished from the scene, some narrative explanation was called for. For the Tahitians, an eclipse was a positive event. Their explanation was that the sun and moon were making love. This optimism seems to have been the exception, however, with themes of a monster or beast devouring the sun during a total solar eclipse being more common. The nature of the beast varied among cultures: a wolf in Nordic lands, a dragon in China, dogs in Central Europe. While this explanation might seem fanciful, it appears less so after experiencing a total eclipse, as the phenomenon reveals unexpected perceptions. For up to an hour, the moon slowly crosses the sun and cuts into its glowing disk. During this period, there is no sign of the moon itself. The remaining crescent sun is so bright that the moon cannot be distinguished against the background sky. Instead, you have the illusion that the sun is literally being eaten away in a sequence of crescents. The sun god is vanishing. When the beast has finally eaten the last piece of the sun, the appearance of the solar corona, a million times dimmer than normal sunlight, surrounding the moon in silhouette, gives the illusion that the sun has disappeared down an infinite hole. In place of the once brilliant sun, there is now a black space in the sky, surrounded by an eerie, dim glow, all at the center of a vast, dark canopy which envelops the land. In ancient times, this was so incomprehensible, compared to people's normal experiences, that there was no easy means to rationalize it. That God was being devoured was quite an apt interpretation. The Chinese feared that the dragon would devour the sun and leave them permanently in the dark. So during a solar eclipse they would bang drums, shout, and make loud noises to frighten the dragon away. They always succeeded. The association of dragons and eclipses in Chinese culture inspired the flag of the Qing dynasty, which was the last imperial dynasty in China. In the 19th century, this became the first national flag and ensign of China. 1-4. Why do eclipses remain so fascinating? Even though today we know why eclipses happen, they still fascinate us. This is partly because they are unusual. Twice a year, or in fact twice in 355 days, some sort of solar eclipse happens somewhere on the Earth's surface. But the spectacular total eclipses happen only about 6 times a decade. Each is visible on a mere 0.5% of the Earth's surface, and mostly in locations not easily accessible to most of us. Put another way, if you stay at home waiting for a total solar eclipse, on the average, you would have to wait nearly 400 years. You might be lucky. Residents near the confluence of the Ohio and Mississippi rivers in the United States, who experienced totality in 2017, only need to wait until 2024 for a repeat. In Zambia, there were 2 total eclipses in little over a year, in 2001 and 2002, and the region around Jerusalem experienced 3 in just 54 years, but that was back in the 4th century BC. The statistics even out, however, as Jerusalem hasn't experienced totality since 1133 and must wait until 2241 for the next occurrence, a gap of 1,108 years. The rarity of total solar eclipses is obviously part of their attraction, but anyone who has seen one will give a more compelling reason. If asked to describe the most beautiful natural phenomenon of all, many might cite a brilliant rainbow or the red sky reflected off clouds at sunset, but the diamond ring effect that heralds a total solar eclipse, an explosion of light on the edge of the moon's inky circle as it blots out the sun, puts all other contenders in the shade. I will describe the build-up to totality in detail later, but in summary, there is a parade of unusual light effects as colours gradually change, the sky turns a steely grey, and the shadow of the moon suddenly envelops you. You can feel the shadow coming as the temperature cools. But even though darkness has been growing for several minutes, the arrival of the moon's shadow, travelling at several times the speed of sound, seems like someone turning a dimmer switch, and within a second darkness envelops you. But not totally. Daylight is visible around the horizon from beyond the extent of the moon's shadow. Meanwhile, stars are visible within a circular canopy of darkness directly above you. And in the middle of this nightscape is what looks like the eye of God, a black hole where the sun should be, surrounded by the most delicate silvery glow, the solar corona. Animals have gone quiet. The world seems to stand still. Something is happening that is utterly outside normal experience. It is not possible to relate it to anything you have ever seen before. You feel humbled in the face of great natural forces, and many feel a state of rapture. When you've listened to the rest of this book, hopefully you will be inspired to experience totality for yourself. Then you will understand why the phenomenon defies description to anyone who has not been in the moon's shadow. You are more likely to see a lunar eclipse when the Earth's shadow is cast on the moon. You might suppose that this makes totality boring, as the moon will disappear. However, the Earth's atmosphere bends some sunlight and beams it onto the moon, illuminating its outer regions. The blue part of the spectrum is scattered away, while the red and orange penetrate the atmosphere like at sunset. The result is that the moon is bathed in a warm orange, giving it the appearance of a luminous pumpkin that is just out of reach. This coloration can, in the extreme, be red, and the appearance of a blood-red moon has caused consternation among those who are unprepared. This phenomenon has been associated with the crucifixion of Jesus of Nazareth. 1.5. How do plants and animals react? Plants and animals react to total eclipses as if they are experiencing the onset of a short night. The gloom about 10 minutes before totality mimics twilight, and then suddenly darkness comes like nightfall. This sudden onrush of apparent night can confuse animals. At the eclipse of August 21, 1560, birds fell down from the sky to the ground in terror of such horrid darkness. And back in 1239, a chronicler recorded that during a solar eclipse, wild beasts could easily be caught because they were bewildered. My experience in Zambia in June 2001 was that crickets began to chirp about 20 minutes before totality as the temperature fell. Before that, all had been silent, and the sudden background noise was both persistent and unexpected. Birds began to roost with about 5 minutes to go, and while their mass movement was very noticeable, none that I saw fell from the sky. It was during the sudden onset of darkness in the final minute that larger animals made their move, and I can well believe that medieval report of wild beasts being bewildered, as in Zambia, hippopotami came out of the Zambezi River and moved toward our campsite. In the United States in 2017, I was in Teton Village, Wyoming, at the foot of the mountains. The temptation to hike up the mountain for a better view was tempered by the real concern that bears might be disturbed by the darkness. Less dramatic, though nonetheless charming, is the way that plants close their petals as if at the end of the day. More remarkable can be the almost instantaneous return to normality as daylight returns in a flash. Flocks of birds erupt from the trees as if from a catatonic sleep, and the cacophony of night creatures and crickets suddenly ends. Singular among the animals is the extreme response of humans. An audio tape during an eclipse reveals normally reserved, sane people shouting and behaving as if at a rave, uttering words that are not usually common in polite conversation. One watcher described the experience as like being at a Grateful Dead concert, but without the drugs. However, the release of endorphins in the excitement might make the qualifier debatable. 1.6. Do eclipses portend doom? Eclipses do not portend doom. That's the short answer. Eclipses happen nearly every 2 weeks. Each month the sun, earth and moon are out of alignment by at most 5 degrees, less than 10 solar radii at new moon. At 2 weeks before and after full moon, a similar situation occurs. The only relevant force at work during this time is gravity. The moon raises tides on Earth as we spin beneath it each day. The extra gravitational tug of perfect alignment at an eclipse is trifling and in practice immeasurable, so any coincidence between an eclipse and an earthquake is just that, coincidence. The psychological effect, however, can be very powerful, and auto-suggestion can have significant consequences. For example, top athletes can outperform themselves when they feel good, or fail when they feel out of sorts. Likewise, in ancient times, an army might crumble when told by soothsayers that an eclipse was a portent of disaster. Of course, for every defeat there is also a victory. So eclipses should portend good or bad times in near equal measure. 1.7. Are eclipses dangerous? No weird forces are released during an eclipse, contrary to a widespread superstition. Ignore warnings to stay indoors to evade supposedly dangerous rays. Such claims are nonsense. If you're pregnant, there is no effect on your fetus. Food prepared during an eclipse will not be poisoned. Eclipses are natural events when one celestial body happens to pass in the same line of sight as another. Far from a total solar eclipse being some miraculous, exceptional celestial event, it is actually one of the most remarkable affirmations of the power of science. The times and locations of eclipses can be calculated over thousands of years, and their repeated confirmation testifies to the precision of the clockwork universe first identified by Sir Isaac Newton 300 years ago. Total eclipses are psychologically bizarre and awesome and can disturb the emotions. Don't miss the chance to be disturbed. Don't stay indoors. Go outside and experience this natural gift with family and friends. You will have a memory to share for a lifetime. That said, there is one genuine potential hazard, namely the temptation during the partial eclipse to look at the crescent sun with the naked eye. Never look at the sun without suitable protection at any stage during a partial eclipse, but during totality you can and should. Totality is even the time to look through binoculars at the corona. But beware the end of totality. During those precious minutes of totality, the pupils in your eyes will have become accustomed to the darkness and dilated, and the sudden brightness of the diamond ring shining through your dilated pupils can seriously damage your retina. This is especially hazardous if you happen to be looking through a telescope at that instant. Beware the mistaken belief that you can look at the sun so long as your eyes don't hurt. Sunlight damages the eyes in subtle ways. Light enters the eye through the cornea and is focused onto the retina by a lens. The retina converts light into electrical signals which pass to the brain. Most of the retina records low-resolution images, such as in our peripheral vision. Our direct line of sight gives high-resolution vision, which enables you to read, recognize your friends, and drive a car safely. This high resolution is thanks to a tiny area in the middle of the retina called the fovea. Damage the fovea, and you will lose the ability to resolve images. If you look directly at the sun, its rays will be focused onto the fovea and heat it. Just as focusing sunlight through a lens onto a sheet of paper can set it alight, so the eye's lens can cause sunlight to burn the fovea. There are easy ways to view the sun without the need to take risky glances. The golden rule is to look at the totally eclipsed sun with the naked eye, and even through binoculars or a telescope, but always view the golden sun in the partial eclipse through a solar filter until the very last moment. This filter is not a pair of sunglasses. You need special goggles or a sheet of welder's glass. Viewing the partially eclipsed sun is a potential hazard, and more details and suggestions are provided in Chapter 7. 1.8. Are eclipses linked with great events? In literature and historical myth, eclipses are linked with great events, but in reality there is no such correlation. A total solar eclipse is memorable, and if some major event coincides with or even occurs near in time to it, a powerful psychological connection is natural. The occurrence of an eclipse can also be used to adorn the significance of events, such as the birth or death of individuals. Eclipses of the sun or moon are visible somewhere on Earth on average 4 times each year, so it is to be expected that some of these will coincide with major world events. The number of historically important people is vast, so chance dictates that some occasion in one or other of this multitude of lives will occur near an eclipse of either the sun or the moon. The first total lunar eclipse that I experienced was in California in February 1971. Later that night, a major earthquake hit Los Angeles. Each of these singular events will have remained long in the memories of those who experienced either of them. For anyone who was present at both, it is natural to make an association between them. However, a large number of eclipses occur without being followed by significant earthquakes, and many major earthquakes occur without accompanying eclipses. Sometimes these events will coincide. Most often they do not. 1.9. What art depicts eclipses? Medieval European depictions of the crucifixion of Jesus of Nazareth represent the darkness at noon in a variety of ways, some more accurately than others. The role of the eclipse in early artwork was to maintain biblical tradition and to enhance the drama. It was not intended as a faithful rendition of the physical eclipse itself. During the Renaissance and Enlightenment, astronomical observations led to a scientific understanding of eclipses, and this became reflected in the art of the period. Depictions of eclipses moved away from the purely theological and were incorporated into paintings for dramatic effect. By the 19th century, with photography still primitive, artists began to assist scientists in recording eclipses, especially the delicate and complex structures in the solar corona revealed in a total eclipse. In more recent times, eclipses have been incorporated in art to add dramatic symbolism, as in Nicholas Roerich's depiction of Prince Igor's campaign, 1942, where the army advances beneath a totally eclipsed sun and a sky darkened by the shadow of the moon. Prince Igor Svitoslavich and his army, while on their campaign against the Polovtsians, witnessed the total solar eclipse of May 1, 1185. Igor's men thought this was a message from God, and as such was a bad omen. According to legend, After the eclipse, Igor gave a long speech to allay their fears before proceeding on his campaign. It is ironic, perhaps, that the campaign failed. The campaign inspired poetry and Borodin's 19th-century opera. Scholars have interpreted the presence of the eclipsed sun in the artwork of 1942 as a metaphor for the fascist threat of eclipsing the Enlightenment and the Soviet confrontation with the Nazi army at the Battle of Stalingrad. 110. Can modern understanding of eclipses illuminate biblical texts? Since Edmund Halley discovered how to compute the locations and timings of eclipses accurately in the 18th century, it has become possible to back-calculate their chronology. This enables us to identify the dates for famous eclipses, and thereby set markers for historians over thousands of years. For example, eclipses are mentioned in the Old Testament of the Bible, such as in Genesis, when Abraham is in Canaan, when the sun was going down, great darkness fell upon him. The location and timing fit with the solar eclipse that occurred around 6:30 p.m. local time on what would have been May 9, 1533 BC. Some biblical scholars claim this date is too early, however, and also that there is no explicit reference to a solar eclipse. If it were agreed that 1533 BC was indeed the date, this would be the earliest established eclipse. Another famous biblical eclipse is recorded in the Book of Joshua. Colin Humphreys and Graham Waddington have analysed the records carefully and, if correct, have produced a formidable example of how eclipses aid historical research. Their work also illustrates how the understanding of eclipses can illuminate interpretation of biblical texts. The most remarkable feature of this eclipse has been its association with a miracle, as the sun and moon apparently stopped and even reversed their motion. The Old Testament scholar Robert Dick Wilson translated Joshua chapter 10, verses 12b to 14, as follows. "Be eclipsed, O sun, in Gibeon, and thou moon in the valley of Aijalon. And the sun was eclipsed, and the moon turned back, while the nation was avenged on its enemies." The sun does not stop, nor can the moon turn back in its tracks at any time. If this translation is reliable, the description is most probably of an optical illusion linked to the fact that the moon traverses the face of the sun from west to east, hence opposite to the direction of their familiar westward motion across the sky. As to the nature of the eclipse, the first analyses assumed it was total and settled on September 30, 1131 BC. However, this date does not sit comfortably with the time of Joshua having entered Canaan, which is thought to have been no later than 1200 BC. Humphreys and Waddington, therefore, examined whether the event could have involved an annular eclipse, where the moon's silhouette does not completely fill the solar disk and leaves a bright ring or annulus visible. The first records that distinguish between total and annular eclipses are from the 13th century AD in China. Indeed, the Chinese recorded two annular eclipses in 198 BC and 306 AD as total eclipses. Humphreys and Waddington computed the conditions for annular eclipses visible over Gibeon between 1500 BC and 1050 BC, these being the most extreme scholastic limits for dates when Joshua entered Canaan. They found a single example on October 30, 1207 BC, which passed directly over the land of Canaan. Their computation reveals that the eclipse took place in the afternoon, about an hour before normal sunset. According to the Book of Joshua, having marched all night, the Israelites attacked the Amorites at Gibeon and then pursued them for about 30 miles through Azekah to Makeda. The eclipse path included Azekah. The occasion is often referred to as Joshua's Long Day because of an intriguing remark in the biblical record. The sun did not hurry to set for about a whole day. Humphreys and Waddington calculated.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?